We've all heard about laws in the books that might have made sense once, but just make us scratch our heads now. It turns out a bunch of those laws made people scratch their heads when they were first passed as well. Kevin Underhill is a lawyer at a firm in San Francisco and the owner of a robust sense of humor. He writes about the funny parts of the law and the legal system in a blog called Lowering the Bar. He and his work have been found in and on Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and NPR, among others. And he's got a book out called The Emergency Sasquatch Ordinance and Other Real Laws That Human Beings Have Actually Dreamed Up, Enacted, and Sometimes Even Enforced. Kevin Underhill, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Sure, thank you. Glad to be here.
Did you consider comedy as a career and decide you needed to pay your bills more?
I'm still considering comedy as a career. I consider it every day. But yeah, it's... It takes a long time to get to the level where you can actually pay a mortgage, especially in San Francisco.
Boy, no kidding. So are you an actual litigator? Do you work in the courtroom?
Sometimes. Most of what I do, not surprisingly, is writing. I do a lot of the legal analysis and writing, and I also do appeals. But I have sometimes done courtroom stuff.
I have this vision of you in a courtroom before the Your Honor. A lawyer walks into a bar.
Yeah, one of the things you learn pretty quickly is you have to be very careful with humor, actually, in the practice, which is kind of the whole reason that I think I channeled it out into this into the blog.
It's an outlet for you. Yeah, I can imagine. So, did your affinity for the funnier parts of the law get you in some trouble in law school or in practice?
You know, it's hard to get in too much trouble in law school, especially when you don't go to class every day. But it really hasn't gotten me in too much trouble in the practice, except like back in the day, before there was a blog, there was an email list, you know, and occasionally sometimes you go a little close to the line on that. But usually, this firm, my firm's Shicardi & Bacon, which is based in Kansas City, but I'm in the San Francisco office, and they, over the years, have really been pretty forgiving.
So in the book, The Emergency Sasquatch Ordinance, you take us all the way back to ancient Egypt. How broad is the scope of the book?
Oh, yeah, it actually goes back before Egypt, or about the same time, I guess. You know, the first code that most people have heard of is maybe the Code of Hammurabi, because those were the Babylonians, actually, and that was carved on he had it carved all over the place to make sure people knew it. But it goes back a little bit before that to the Hittites, and I just like that one. It's actually the first code that we know about is actually a little over 4,000 years old. We don't actually have the whole code, but we have part of it, and I liked it because the part that we have talks about beer.
I was going to ask you, the code is so venerated, I didn't realize that part of it involved fizzy drinks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. You know, there are, like you said in the intro, there are some things that, you know, make no sense at all to us today. And then there are some things that are completely consistent. Like there are laws back, you know, 4,000, 4,500 years ago that had to do with beer and also beekeeping. And I also have a law in the book, actually four, that are German laws about beekeeping today. So a lot of this stuff is surprisingly constant.
Well, I was going to ask you then, by historical comparison, do we write any more goofy laws now than in any culture previous? And it sounds like it's pretty consistent from one century to the next.
Yeah, it really is. And sometimes that's because of just... So I have a feeling that sometimes they seem goofier to us now than they did then because, you know, every culture has its own laws and they reflect the customs and of the day. But you know, there are some of these older ones that that make sense, and then there are some that just are completely puzzling. Like about that same time, the Hittites had a law that made it illegal to steal another person's door.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it says if anyone steals a door as a result of a quarrel, he shall replace everything that may get lost in the house, and he shall pay 40 shekels of silver. And I read that. There's a whole compilation of the laws that we have from these guys. And I read that. I'm like, what was going on at the time that people were stealing each other's doors and running away with them? Yeah, you know, what's the point of that? Were doors really expensive? Or, were they just taking somebody's door and hoping a thief would come by and steal all the stuff? you know, and how do you expect to get away with that if you're, you know, you're just running down the street carrying a door? People probably have a pretty good idea what's going on. So I could not figure out any purpose for that, but it's fun to speculate.
Right, yeah, as you pointed out, you know, you could just leave the door there and still take the stuff inside the house.
Oh, yeah.
So the other things in the Hittites laws in particular that get into bestiality and other
ways. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's, like I said, some things are unfortunately consistent throughout the centuries. But, yeah, it's really... That one's really strange, and that's one we can't. I mean, it's one thing to have a law against it or not against it, but they made kind of weird distinctions between different kinds of animals.
In other words, you would get fined for acts with certain animals, but not others, and it also made the difference in intention. Like if the animal attacked you.
Oh yeah, yeah. They had right, and there was very weird, and they would not only would they fine people, it was also a capital crime sometimes, depending on the animal, although they did that a lot, actually. There were lots of capital crimes. But then here's one. What do you want me to read this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Summarize
it? You just summarize it, yeah.
All right. Basically, the Hittite law was if, you know, they had laws, like we were just talking about, that penalized the man for doing it. But then there's also a set of laws where if it provides for a different outcome if an ox or a pig spring upon a man for intercourse, as they put it. I don't know if that's ever happened. It's just, if it did then.
Not in any episode of Wild Kingdom I was ever watching.
Yeah, yeah, mine either.
So. All right. Emergency Sasquatch Ordinance is the name of the book by Kevin Underhill. He's our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. I get the sense when I look at some of these ancient laws in particular that people were missing a lot of body parts because of the legal system.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, there's some of this today, like in, it just made me think suddenly of like workers' comp laws where you get a certain amount of compensation for a particular injuries, they get pretty specific. But, you know, back in the day, although they had a lot of capital crimes, they also handled a lot of stuff by fines. You know, there was, because it wasn't just an eye for an eye, there was a whole schedule of fines that they would impose. You know, instead of criminal laws, you would just pay the other party for, what you did. And so, they had a whole sort of schedule for this stuff, and then there was even one, I think this is an ancient, the Franks, they had fines for hitting somebody, and it sort of, you were fined more depending on how hard you hit him.
Well, I noticed that description of, like, you know, if the bones are showing out of the skull, that's going to cost you more.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a kind of violent culture. I mean, that's, unfortunately, was the same way back then. But yeah, it's... if the three bones that lie over the brain protrude, he shall pay 1,200 denarii. But if you hit him and it just caused blood to flow, that was only 600.
Oh, wow. So it's a bargain then.
That's a real bargain, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, are people... The thing that made me, I don't think people really plan it out to that extent when they're doing it, but I guess you could if you wanted.
So, and I understand too with the Franks in particular that there was a fairly long list of insults for which you had to pay the target.
Oh yeah, and they had a whole schedule of fines for that, and those were those were fun too. You could call somebody, and I have to say with some of these with a lot of this older stuff, I have a feeling that something might be lost in translation, and so this may be one of them. So you could call somebody a fox or a rabbit. And the fine for that was 120 denarii. I'm not really sure why that's considered abusive, but that's what they did. Same amount of fine if you accused another man of throwing down his shield and running away. So you called him a coward. That was 120. Then there's this one: he who claims that someone else is covered in dung shall be liable to pay 120 denarii. Mm-hmm. And that's, that's the same amount as for calling somebody a rabbit. I mean, I definitely go with that one.
Yeah, really call them. Yeah, it's easier.
It's the same fine.
Sure. Yeah, and then no handling of dung involved.
Right. Well, yeah, you don't have to actually do it. You just have to claim someone else.
Ah, okay, that's what it is. Okay, all right. We have an email from Bill in Arcata who would be interested to know an ancient bee law. Any laws you found dealing with bees, either ancient or more contemporary?
Oh, you know, if I remember right, now I don't have the ancient bee law in the book, but I have the more recent German ones. My recollection is that the part of what struck me about it was that they were pretty much the same. In other words, when you are keeping bees, and the person who's emailing may do that, it turns out. And I didn't know this, but one of the problems you have is what if your bees one day get up and decide to fly away?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they do that. So the answer to that is, and again, my recollection is this was the same in the Hittite Code and also in the Code of Justinian, which is the 6th century, and then the Germans still have it in their civil code today. And it turns out that if your bees... it depends a lot on whether you're there at the time, because under the German law, if the bees get up and they fly away, their law says it becomes ownerless if the owner fails to pursue it without undue delay or if he gives up the pursuit. So I guess this is a response to the practical problem of if your bees, you know, how are you going to prove they're your bees,
uh-huh.
right? Apparently, the rule is you have to be able to say, I was there when it happened, and I chased them, and I kept them in sight the whole time, which seems like it would be difficult in practice to do that, but you've got to pursue immediately.
All right, so we move away from bees and off into other creatures, sort of marginally about birds as we talk about tarring and feathering, and you point out in this book, I didn't realize this ever was an official punishment some places.
Yeah, the first recorded... It probably predated this, but the first recorded incident of it was actually on, I think it was the Third Crusade. It was Richard III. Now I'm going to have to look that up. Surprisingly, I don't have all these memorized.
But I remember Richard I.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, here we go. Richard I, right, and that was the Third Crusade. And this is the first recorded appearance of tarring and feathering because... You know, they went out from England by sea, and he passed a royal proclamation to try to keep everybody in line while they were on the way there. And so there were these rules about, you know, if people got in fights or killed each other on the ship. And then it said that a robber who is convicted shall be shorn like a hired fighter. And, hired...
Yeah, they
were shaved. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff we can learn from these laws. You
truly.
See. And boiling tar shall be poured over his head, and feathers from a cushion shall be shaken out over his head, so that he may be publicly known. And at the first land where the ship's put in, he shall be cast on shore. So one source I found said that's actually the first. The first recorded appearance of it, although, you know, who knows how old it is.
So I left so little time for laws in the United States. You point out that Congress only recently banned the use of the term lunatic, or was it banning lunatics themselves?
No, they couldn't ban lunatics. I mean, they'd have a conflict of interest there, I think. but, yeah, one of the things you see if you look at this stuff is, you know, a lot of these laws are, even in the U.S., they're very old and... sometimes they have terms that are outdated. You know, I mean, at the time, the terms like, you know, idiot or lunatic were not, they weren't pejorative like they are now. They were just sort of the official descriptive terms. But, I mean, the thing I thought was interesting about it is they didn't actually ban lunatic until a few years ago. Huh. Actually, yeah, 2012. And that was actually the only purpose of what they called the 21st Century Language Act of 2012.
Is there a particular law of all the stuff you looked at, and maybe more modern stuff in our own republic, that really struck you as a what?
Yeah, there actually were quite a few. I mean, I like the there are some resolutions I could talk about, but that's not really fair because the resolutions don't become binding, so
right.
They always do strange things. But one of my favorites is the Guano Islands Act,
uh-huh.
which is. Now it dates back to 1856, but it's still on the books, and it was important at the time because they needed guano as fertilizer,
uh-huh.
and so basically it's a law that says if a citizen of the U.S. finds a deposit of guano, which is, bird dung, on some island, then it can temporarily become part of the United States. And still the law today, so if you find one of those, you can annex it.
All right, your own guano island. In a,
yeah.
All right, the book is called The Emergency Sasquatch Ordinance. The blog is called Lowering the Bar. They are both a creation of Kevin Underhill. Thanks so much for joining us on today's Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
All right, take care.